me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, that music has become positively Pavlovian with the weekend show audience. When they hear that, they rush to sit down with their tea or coffee so they can hear the great stories that we get from abandoned Manitoba raconteur Gordon Goldsborough. And last week, Gordon put Terry through the mill, Manitoba's oldest grain mill, in the village of Homefield in Manitoba. And this week, he has a different tale to tell. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, Laurie.
So I heard you talking with Terry about the Homefield Mill, and at the end of that piece, you gave a clue for this week's story, something about an abandoned fur post?
That's right. I said that it had a connection, the fur trade post, to a major Winnipeg street. And what I was getting at was that here in Winnipeg, we have Ellis Avenue. Mm-hmm. People don't realize, perhaps, that a lot of the streets here in Winnipeg commemorate some of the early fur traders or fur trade investors. In this case, it was a fellow named Edward Ellis, who was an investor in the Hudson's Bay Company.
Oh, it's so like getting your name on the stadium or something.
That's exactly it. So they named a street here in Winnipeg, but then they also named a post out in Western Manitoba, or what is now Western Manitoba, for him, Fort Ellis.
And what did the fort look like?
Well, it wasn't probably what many people may conjure up as a mental picture. You know, you think of these big, very fortified things. You think of, for example, Lower Fort Garry with its stone walls. This was a pretty modest affair. It was actually a fairly low pickets. In fact, if you've been to Fort Gibraltar here in Winnipeg, you may get a sense of what it could have looked like. Sort of a low wooden posts, but in this case, probably even lower than the ones at Fort Gibraltar. Probably not much taller than the height of a man, in fact. Fairly spaced apart, so it really wouldn't have stopped too much in the way of, you know, if there was any kind of battle. I don't think it would have helped very much. I think it was primarily just to sort of just keep a little bit of the traffic out that they wanted to keep out. But otherwise, it was just a collection of buildings. That's really all Fort Ellis was.
And did they have things in there, like industries going on or anything like that?
Yes. Well, it was like a little town. I mean, basically, it was an outpost of civilization in what it was otherwise a fairly remote area. And so they had all the things you would need to have. So there was, for example, barracks for the men, most of whom, of course, were unmarried. There was, however, a little cottage for men that had families. There was a blacksmith shop because they needed to make their tools. They had a dairy, of course, to make milk and cheese and other products they needed. They had warehouses to store their goods. They had a carpenter shop so they could make things. And then they had this large trading post which is what the main purpose for the facility was. It was for trading. It was a fur trade post, and people would bring furs and, of course, trade them for goods. And then finally, there was a great big building, a two-story sort of large building that was the home and the office of what they called the chief factor, who was the sort of the guy in charge.
So this fort, nice little town going on inside, trading post, but what was its actual purpose? Was it to do with like river trade or furs, or what's the deal?
Well, it would be both. I mean, the fact was that it was right along the Assiniboine River. The original site of Fort Ellis was actually a little ways further west than the site that's there today. And then around 1862, they brought it right to the Assiniboine River. Of course, keep in mind, the rivers were a major source of commerce. That's how all of the transportation took place. People would boat down the river. And so having it on the Assiniboine would have been a great idea because then they could see things coming. In fact, the site they chose was spectacular. The river kind of meanders through a fairly deep valley there. And if you're up on the top of the overlooking the valley, you get just a commanding view up and down the river. So not only could you see anyone coming to trade at the fort, but of course, if there was anybody with ill intent, you could sort of see them coming too and get prepared.
High ground.
And then, of course, you were on the plains behind. So anybody that was out on the plains, maybe shooting bison, you know, bringing some of the products to trade from that would come right into the fort as well. So it was just a natural location for commerce.
So 1860s, does that mean steamboats?
Yes, indeed. Well, a little later, the steamboat era in Manitoba, people have these romantic notions of, you know, the steamboat era in the United States. Here in Canada, it was a much shorter period of time. It was really only, well, the earliest steamboat was in the 1850s, but there really weren't many of them until the late 60s, 70s, 80s, and then they kind of petered out. The only real steamboat we know about that would have got to Fort Ellis was one called the Alpha. It plied up and down the Assiniboine River. Of course, keep in mind, the Assiniboine was never a deep river, and that was always a bit of a problem. You couldn't take boats very far up the river because it was just too shallow. The steamboats were fairly shallow draft, and it could get up – well, they said it could get as far as Brandon from Winnipeg. Occasionally, when the water was high, they could get as far as Fort Ellis, but that was about it. So steamboats weren't really a reliable source of transportation. It was more likely to be just overland, you know, with things like ox carts and so on.
So what killed the fort then if it wasn't lack of steamboat trade?
Well, it was the coming of the railway. Because, of course, the railway, which arrived in western Manitoba in the early 1880s, basically brought vast numbers of people. You know, it was so much easier to get to western Manitoba then than it is now or than it was before. And they just brought vast numbers of farmers. And, of course, then it was no longer necessary to have a fur trade post because the fur trade was petering out and the farmers were taking over. So other communities were established. So not far from Fort Ellis, we have the community of St. Lazare. And that became sort of the local area for commerce.
So what's left?
Well, not a lot, unfortunately. Most of the fort was made from wood. So, of course, wood isn't a very long-lasting material. Most of it was gone. In fact, by 1930, the only thing that was left was the chimney from the blacksmith's forge. Hmm. It was made of stones and concrete, and it fell down apparently sometime after that. It's long gone. I've been to the site. There's nothing that we can see left of it, and there was nothing left other than, I was told, well, in fact, recently I just learned that there are three cemeteries at the site.
Wow. They died like flies at Fort Ellis.
Well, I mean, you have to keep in mind, though, this facility was a long-lasting one, mm-hmm. so there would have been people inevitably who would pass away. But what's interesting, I think, is that the different cemeteries relate to the classes, that in fact there were the people who were, I guess, the wealthiest and the most powerful. And the cemetery there, they actually have stone markers for the graves. For the rest of them, not so much. In fact, I'm not so sure why they even know there was a cemetery, because I suspect there's probably very little in the way of markers that are left. But for the people who are the regular rank and file workers, they would just get buried in an unmarked grave.
So we can just go and see all the rich people who lived there.
That's right. But there is one other thing you can go to see. Back in 1940, the Historic Sites and Monuments Board of Canada, who mark important historic sites around the country, put up a stone cairn, a very large one, a very massive one. And it's still standing there 70-odd years later.
Hmm. As usual, Gordon, absolutely fascinating. And do you have a hint for next week?
Yes. Next week's site will relate to a drainage ditch in Transcona.
Oh, a drainage ditch. That does sound fascinating.
Thrilling, yes.
I'm sure it will be. It always is. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.